evening.
Eli.
All right. Good evening. Parshas Vayishlach begins right where we left off with the last parsha. This next to the last pasuk in the last parsha, Vayetze, says very simply, Vayyakov halach ledarko vayifku bo malachei Elohim. And he was met by malachim. So we get over here, we begin the parsha, and these are the malachim we're talking about, Vayishlach Yaakov malachim lefono. Now, what were these angels doing here? And the purpose of these angels over here were to tell him he did not know that he was about to encounter Esav. He had no idea. He might have gone in a different direction had he known this in advance. The malachim came at this point in time to apprise him of the fact that Esav was on his way. So therefore, he sent these messengers, these malachim, the angels, with a message for Esav to tell him exactly what he wanted to tell him, and he made sure he chose his words carefully. And Vayetzavo Sama, what he told him, Ko Sama, and I want you to give him this exact message. Ko Amar V'cho Yaakov, tell him this is what Yaakov said, Im Lavan Garti V'echararoto. I lived with Lavan all these years, V'echararoto, and I waited till now. Now, there's various interpretations of the pasuk, but in Lavan Garti, the Rashi makes a point of saying, Yes, Tariag Mitzvah Shamarti, so that we know that he did the 630 mitzvahs. But the reality is, what does that message actually mean? Does Esav really care that he kept his mitzvahs? The answer is really very simple, because when last they met, Esav was given the bracha by Yitzchak, and what Yitzchak told him, Vayokasher Torid Ufarakto Ulo Me'al Tzavarecha. The reality is really very simple, that you will never be able to get the upper hand on Yaakov unless he falters and does not carry out the mitzvahs as he's commanded to do. And so Yaakov is now telling him, as Tayag Mitzvahs, I lived with Lavan for 20 years and I remained true to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. I remained true to God all those years, and therefore you won't be able to get the upper hand. One of the mefarshim that I read recently said the operative word, the operative phrase in the pasuk is v'echararoto. What bothered Yaakov, though, was that even though he was on a mission from his parents to go away all these years, but he could have come home perhaps after the first 14 years, and what his message is, im lavan garti, and I did whatever I was supposed to do for those 14 years, however, to make my whole family and make my life, but v'echararoto, I tarried, I waited the last 6 years just for the sake of making a livelihood, making some money for myself, and that could have been the chink in the armor, v'echararoto, maybe that's the problem. And therefore, what he's telling Esav is very simple. Don't think I'm looking for a handout. You're my rich brother, but don't think that I'm a poor nobody who has nothing, and I'm just coming to see you because I need you to help me out. And he tells him, "Vahili shar v'chamor tzom v'yevet v'shivcha." I have a big flock, a big herd of animals, many servants, maid servants, and tell him that I'm just want to say hello to my long lost brother. And they came back, but what exacerbated, what made Yaakov nervous was when the malachim returned, they said, we went to Esav and we spoke to him, but we noticed that he's marching, literally marching with 400 people. It says likrascha. The implication of the word likrascha is against you, is that he's coming, he has evil intentions because he's literally marching. He heard you coming, and he's marching with 400 soldiers. And so now, Vayiro Yaakov miod, he got very afraid. But the double lashon in the pasuk, the double language, it says he was very afraid, and then it says, Vayetzalo, and he was afraid, or it bothered him. And what bothered him, why it is the double language over here, is once again, he knew that God promised him in the dream at the beginning of with the Sulam, last week's parsha, started off with his dream that he had, and God told him that you will return home and you will get safe conduct on your way home. He promised them that you will be able to come home. Don't worry about it. Nothing will happen to you. I will protect you. And he knew that. And so what bothered him was he was very nervous, very afraid, and he was wondering if this meant that he was something wrong in his emunah, that he had lost some faith. He should have been more resolute, more stout in his courage, and he should have been more fearless because God made him a promise. So now the fact that he exhibited signs of fear bothered him about his own belief system. And at this point in time, Ayachah said, Sawama Ferito, and he divided everybody into two camps, and so on and so forth. But Yaakov is of the impression that maybe he'll get a chance to run away, but that leaves a lot to be desired. There's one very interesting word when we get to Pasuk Yud Aleph. It says Kotonti. Somebody asked me this week, and they saw a chumash with the note on the trup on the word Kotonti. Most of our chumashim today, we have an Aslo Gerish, which is a note that goes high. It's very upbeat. And then there are a lot of old chumashim, even some chumashim now, that give it a revi, which is a very downturned note, which is in a way sort of a sad note. And the difference is really that if it's read one way, kotonti, like in that manner, it really is Yaakov saying, what did I do wrong? I've been good, I've been faithful, and I did everything I was supposed to, and I deserve your attention and safe conduct. I'm just reminding you. But the low point is that Yaakov is really being humbled and feels maybe he's unworthy of God's protection and begging him for his life and the life of his family. Or as some would want to say, that God promised to protect him, but not necessarily the rest of his family. But, and all of these things are taking place. This is what's on his mind. And but obviously at this point in time, God is not answering him for the simple reason that perhaps God is saying, we had this conversation many years ago, 20 years ago, when you were on your way to Lavan. I don't have to remind you. You should really realize that yourself. And it recounts here all the things that he had at this point. But on the way before Esav gets to him, he has this confrontation with the angel of Esav. God understands that what was the purpose of his confrontation with the Sar Shel Esav, with the angel. And of course, I remember my father telling me that God wanted Yaakov to appear, even though he was an upstanding man, good looking, and a brawny fellow, certainly, and had a man of great stature. And Esav, this might create some jealousy, and God made him roll around in the dirt with the angel so that he would appear to be a sorrowful-looking character, tattered, torn clothing, full of dust, and Esav would have some, be sorry for him, take pity on him, and not want to do him any damage. I look at it the other way, and what I used to answer was that very simply, that this was Yaakov was being very nervous over here about the situation, how he would handle Esav if he would be able to withstand the onslaught of Esav and his men. And God created this situation of the angel wrestling with Yaakov throughout the night, and the angel not being able to best Yaakov was to show Yaakov, to teach him, to build his confidence and say that even an angel couldn't best you in a confrontation. And so what are you afraid of? If an angel couldn't beat you, how much more so you will be able to stand up to Esav? And that was God's message to him, and that's why God didn't answer, and this was God's answer to him. And this is where he leaves it at this point in time. But at this point in time, he limped. And of course, we know that at this point in time, we get the mitzvah of Gid Anosha, the second mitzvah in the Torah that we have is the Gid Anosha, that we don't eat the shank, the sciatic nerve, actually. And that's one of the main reasons that we only eat the forequarter, because when you split up the hind quarter of the meat to get out the vein, which is the sciatic nerve, the meat would be not very pleasant looking. It would almost be chopped meat. It wouldn't be worth the energy to do it, and the meat wouldn't be presentable on a table to sell it that way. But nevertheless, we're moving along over here, and the position of all the his wives and his children was very interesting. And of course, the Midrashim differ with the point of Vayishlo Kehu, whether he really kissed him and he cried, or he tried to bite his neck, and various things of that nature, which we're aware of. But moving on, that's the regular stuff that we're mostly aware of. But now Yaakov is trying to, as much as he's appreciating that Esav is not attacking and he's feeling very relaxed now, but the reality is he doesn't want to remain in Esav's company because that can't go well in the end, because he just got away from Laban's influence and he doesn't want Esav to have any influence on his children or even on himself or whatever it is, and that is part of the problem here. And he begs off and says, you go on ahead. Things are getting very difficult, and I don't know that I can keep up the pace of you and your soldiers. We're a young crowd and with little children, and we're not ready to march on those at that point in time. We get to the most interesting story in the parasha, and that is the Maase Dina. And the pasuk begins, Vateitze Dino Basle Yar Sher Yoldol Yaakov Leros Bivnos Aretz. We have to look at that pasuk and read it very carefully. And it says that Dina went out. Now, what is preceded is what prompted Dina to go out. And the pasuk says very clearly, Leros Bivnos Aretz, which means that she had no sisters. And what she said, she didn't just go out to see what's doing in the land. What she did was go out to see other girls her age, how they handle life in general, Leros Bivnos Aretz. And that is what the Pasuk is telling us, Leros Bivnos Aretz. I read something many years ago that makes a very interesting statement, which is far afield. It's just that it's interesting. It's before we had the advent of DNA. This was written hundreds of years ago, and says that we know in last week's parsha that after Yaakov had six sons, Leah was she was with child once again, and it was originally going to be a boy, but she prayed to God for Rachel's sake that it should be a girl, and sure enough, it was a girl. But one of the commentaries makes an interesting point in saying that since the unborn child was originally supposed to be a boy, even though it turned out to be a girl, the DNA makeup of the child was that of a boy, was a male child, and boys go out. And she was somewhat of a tomboy. This was written a few hundred years ago. It's very interesting, the thought process. And we could see that in today's day and age, how relevant it is, what we've seen in the last 20 years, what goes on in society, and that she exhibited signs of a boy, and that's what happened. But nevertheless, Shechem saw her, and he kidnapped her, and he seduced her, or rather, he did more than that. But he meant to do it just for the sake of his lust, to satisfy his lust, but then he started to have feelings for her. The interesting thing is, when it tells us later, it says, V'yakov shoma ki time es dina bito vanov hayu es mikneyu. When Yaakov heard about it, that she had been already seduced, the point of telling us those words were, he would have acted more swiftly and not waited for the sons to come back had she not been molested up to this point in time. But since she had already been violated, there was no rush at this time to get her back. And V'charish Yaakov ad bo'am, and he waited till his other sons came back from the field. And now they went to talk. What we should be aware of the fact before we pass judgment on the Shimon and Levi for what they did, we have to realize that the whole time in the whole Aliyah that we're reading the whole story, that they didn't return Dina. He kept her captive the whole time. And these few days that went on between this, or actually it was only accordingly 3 days. Because when it says Vayhi Bayom HaShlishi BeYosam Kohavim, when it was on the third day when they were not well from the Milah, it doesn't mean the third day of the Milah. The Abar Ben El makes a point of saying it's for the third day that she had been kidnapped. And this was right after the Milah then, and they were extremely vulnerable at this point. But he makes a very interesting commentary over here that almost sounds implausible, but nevertheless, it has to be something more than that, because the reality is that when you go and get to Shechem, it wouldn't have been possible to just go get the chieftain of a whole city, because there are so many people. He would have his guards that have guards. Imagine trying to break into the White House, how much security you'd have to go through. There would have to be a lot of destruction until you would be able to get to the president or the king. And the same thing happened by Shechem. They would have to, till they got to Shechem, they would have to kill everybody that was guarding the leader, guarding Shechem, before they would be able to do it. And he said that the way they were able to accomplish this was, since most of these men were lying in bed, certainly not well enough to get out, they went from house to house quietly, and they would go in and tell them, "We understand that the man of the house is not well. We are here to help them. We have some medicine to administer to them." And they would allow them to go into the room. They still did not suspect. And they would go in the room, and they made short work of these people, so to speak. And they went out, and they told the people in the house, "Don't bother them. They're sleeping now." And they went from house to house carrying out their nefarious plan. But the interesting point is that at the end of the story, after Yaakov goes ahead and complains to the sons, "Lahavisheni b'yoshev ha'aretz, you brought shame on the house, because now they're going to think that we're all a bunch of murderers, and they're going to gather up and hurt us and take revenge." Their answer was, "Vayomru hachzona yases hachosenu." They violated our sister, and that does not sit well, and that cannot be done. They have to learn a lesson. And that is the last word in the story, and therefore the implication of that being the last word in the story is that God is on their side. And to bolster that thought process, it's afterwards when God goes ahead and tells Yaakov, very simply, "I need you," after the Maisa of Esav, getting through Esav, and now surviving the Maisa of Dinah, that they took her back home. And now God says, "I need you to bring a carbon." But the purpose of the carbon, God says to him, is to thank me for saving you from the hands of Esav, and does not mention one word about the story of Dinah, does not tell them that they have any penance to do for that whatsoever. And that's very, it says, "Vayomer Elokim el Yaakov, kum alei beisel v'shev sham, v'asei sham mizbeach lo'el hanireh lecha." And he says, "Bivar chachom ebnei Esav achicha," from running away from Esav. That's why you're bringing the carbon, for nothing else. You don't have to expiate any other sin. In other words, God is on the side of the Shvatim, on the side of Shimon and Levi, for doing what they had to do. The lesson being that that's the only way you could deal with the situation. To when you know you hurt a Jew, the rest of the world has to learn that there is a price to pay. Now, very interesting thing. We get to one other interesting thing that I noticed. When it gives the story about Reuven, it says, "Vayishkav es bilho pilegesh aviv." So the Mefarshim say that he didn't actually have an affair with Bilhar. He didn't do anything to her. He just moved the clothes. And the Gemara Talmud tells us that anybody who says that Reuven did it is making a big mistake. And we see that by the language and the spelling of the words in the pasuk. Because right after that story, when it says, "Vayishkav es bilha pelegesh aviv,"
And it says, Vayu b'nei Yaakov shnei masorah. The Talmud tells us that Yaakov didn't disown him. He still had 12 children. But the reality is it's even more important to notice that. The word Bechor, as I mentioned in another and a previous lesson, the word Bechor can be spelled with a Beis, a Chof, a Vav, and a Resh, the word we say it, Mole. And most of the time in the Torah, almost every time in the Torah, it's spelled Choser without the Vav, just Beis, Chof, Resh. In this particular time, after it says, Vayishkavis Bilha Pilega Shaviv, it says Bechor Yaakov Reuven. The word Bechor is spelled Mole, but it's not spelled Choser again until after next week's Parsha, after Yosef is sold, and then the onus is put on Reuven, and hereafter, every time it mentions Reuven's name as the Bechor, it's spelled Choser, because at that time, God is sort of knocking him down a peg. And that is the reality of the situation. Unfortunately, of course, we have the passing. Binyamin gives birth. Binyamin is born. And Rachel dies in childbirth. And also, we have the death of Rivka by where it's not mentioned. The reason Chazal tell us that it's not mentioned at all, because there was nobody home. Yitzchak was blind, would not have been able to make any kind of hesped, being blind and infirm, and the only person in the family left to do anything on her behalf would have been Esav, and that would have been not appropriate for Rivka, who she lived to a ripe old age. Obviously, she was well over 100. And at this point in time, if the only eulogy would be from her son Esav, who probably did not get along very well because he understood that she was complicit in stealing the birthright from him. And so it's not mentioned because it wouldn't have been an embarrassment to talk about it. And then we go on to next week's parasha. And Vayatsev Yaakov Matsevo, when Rivka dies, a very important phrase that is very important that we should know. Vayatsev Yaakov Matsevo Kurasa. It says, "He matzeves kuras Rachel arayom," a tombstone, the stone that you have on a cemetery plot, is only a marker for the place. The matzeva is the people that you leave behind, and that's the lesson here. It says, "He matzeves kuras Rachel." That's only a marker where she's buried, and we know that Rachel is. We pray to her, just as often as for Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. She is the one that the Nevi'im tell us that those only the Imahos, Rivka in particular, in the Kinas that we say on Tisha B'Av, and things that we read on Yom Kippur as well, that the only person that we have left that to pray to that God will listen to is Rachel. And that is her lasting memory. It's not just the marker that's left behind. It's the legacy a person leaves behind. And with that, we leave you for this week. Thank you. Good night.